All right. Welcome everybody to the weekly discussions. Thank you, Spartan Council, for heading over here.
Such a good voice. Can you just keep going?
I appreciate that. I appreciate you for coming too. Looks like the audience is starting to fill up. Did we happen to do any sort of announcement? And I say this is the royal we. Did anybody mention that we were going to be doing public calls again?
Now's as good a time as any. No.
Well, we just decided. I feel like people are figuring it out in real time, so. I blame Matt, personally.
I blame the lack of merch.
Yeah, I mean, what does Matt even do here, really?
Good question.
This is great, because he can't defend himself on the voice. This is perfect.
So why don't we give people a quick update on this change in our thinking in terms of public versus private catch-ups?
Well, private ones were dumb, and we all changed our minds, and now they're not private.
Yeah, I think the...
Well, I think another way to put it, and I'm sure more people will supplement, is it would help the community be more involved in why we went down a certain path or not, instead of just relying on publicly written SIPs.
Yeah, back in the old days, we used to do these calls only in public. We've switched this back and forth many times, but I think the starting point was only in public, and then I think there were some things that people were concerned about discussing in public, and so then we started having like a partially private, partially public one, but then we couldn't get our shit together and organize that, so we just made it fully private, and I think the pendulum swinging back the other direction, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, I believe they went private when Sam was on council.
Well, there you go. There's your answer right there.
Sam heard that. He'll be back.
Everyone in the audience is a Sam alt, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, never will.
With that announcement, should we kick off with some of the updates? There is GovCall chat, as usual, on these public channels for any newcomers. We can start with a quick update of the work in progress and then turn over to the council and maybe warm up for the SIP presentations to come. The link's in the chat as well, along with the image for the weekly update. From the core side of things, the team is focused on getting Andromeda onto base, and the progress that's up to on there is audited PERPS V3 plus SNX buyback plus V share is on testnet. I think that was updated again today. And working with integrators, Polynomial, Infinex, Quenta to get wired up on testnet. There's still a blocker of SIP 348, which I think is having some values checked over before going up for voting. I think Caleb's taking care of that. I'm the only one on this stage. There's no other CCs on the stage to give the update, but any questions from the council on the core system and where that's up to in relation to the Andromeda base release? Not seeing any mics off, so I'm going to keep rolling.
Maybe a question about whether the buyback and burn from SIP 345 will be ready with the launch of Andromeda.
Can you say that again? Will be ready?
Yeah, the mechanism that's going to be used for buying back and burning SNX, if that's going to be ready with the launch.
Yeah, so that's already on testnet. It's been tested, it's been handed over to the auditors, and they should be back sometime early next week. So it shouldn't be a blocker.
Cool.
If nothing else, I'll keep rolling. The second, obviously, big piece of that is Personally 3. That audit is all but finished. Any outstanding feedback has been implemented and is already on testnet. I think we're still waiting for the final report, but that's all thumbs up from IOSIRO. The SIP337 does need to be voted on. Again, I think Caleb's checking over a few things, or one or two of the other CCs are checking over the final values, but that really needs to get up for voting if it's not going to hold up the release. The other two things for governance, election module still nearing final audit, but has been taking a bit of a backseat while Purpose and Andromeda is released. So I think that's a pretty good update. A lot of it's the work that's been in progress over the past couple of weeks, and we're getting pretty close to testnet being the configuration that we'd deploy to mainnet.
Can we get maybe either Caleb or a fifth here with a take on sort of how they see the scaling up process of base in terms of like markets, open interest, et cetera? Fifth, they're both raising their hands. Okay.
I did not raise my hand. Someone forced me on the stage.
That was nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Welcome to the arena.
Happy to give this floor to a few.
Okay. I mean, I was forced to the stage also, but happy to.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah, I mean, it always depends. Like with V2, we wanted to kind of be doing that right after, but then we found some stuff that needed to be fixed. So like if all goes well, we'll probably be scaling up in like, you know, mid late January. We also want to have a lot of TVL like deposited to back the pools. Because if there's only a little bit of TVL, then the markets trade, you know, relatively illiquidly. Otherwise they're very risky for the LPs, and the LPs get wrecked and they don't want to LP anymore. Like one of the benefits before, at least with the SNX debt pool for all its flaws, we could go straight to very liquid markets. If we only have like, and I'm just pulling this number out of my ass, like $1 million of USDC deposited TVL, then the markets aren't very functional for traders. So I would say like there's technical aspects of it, which I think we could realistically be ready to scale up in mid to late January. But then there's also the economics of it. We want to make sure we have a critical mass of USDC LPing so that the UX for traders is good.
And so what's that number? Because obviously the Treasury Council is planning to roll out incentives, right? So do you have a sense of what would the equivalent number of USDC need to be in order to, say, replicate like V2X?
To replicate V2X, probably, I think in the past I was thinking 50 million, although realistically it could be 25 million. And then as like a minimum we can make do with it and get the party going, probably like, you know, 10 million would be good. But
well,
yeah, 25 to 50 million is probably enough to replicate V2X. I mean, it'll take us a while to scale to 80 or whatever ridiculous number of markets we have in V2 now. So presumably collateral will come in, during that time, but yeah, I think once we get past 10, we can definitely kick things off.
And yeah, so then my second part of that question was around market scaling. Maybe this is more of a Caleb question, but like what, you know, in the, I guess, ideal case of, let's say we have 50 million of USDC, again, maybe this is, again, a Caleb question, but what do you see, Caleb, as like the process for rolling out these markets?
In terms of open interest limits or
in just what actually sense? Enabling them, So okay. Like, you know, obviously even if, you know, it was low OI caps, like what's the tension for you from a risk perspective? Like what do you see as the tension? Is it like, you know, try and minimize the number of markets and get their open interest to some number?
Yeah.
Or yeah.
Yeah. So we probably need to, as we rolled out V2X, we needed to do it slowly and like monitor it and see how the arbitrages are happening. If we have like lively arbitrages, then the risks associated with volatile, low liquidity things is lower. And that's one part. Another part is, as Keith mentioned, the amount of liquidity backing those markets. So two things that we have to kind of be wary about. One is like, are there people trading and are there arbitrages taking place? Because V2X didn't like just sprung up a network of arbitrage players. It required some some incentive and some excitement around it. Two is the liquidity backing those markets. So these are not kind of things that we can predict. We'll have to go slowly, like scale up markets, maybe as the current plan is to start with like ETH and BTC, which doesn't require a lot of arbitrage traders because the skew tends to balance itself and it's easy to arbitrage those two. And go from there slowly, iteratively, market by market based on demand. The good thing about the V3 deployment, it would be much more fast to get things going because of all the work that core contributors put into the deployment process of V3, which is basically the accumulation of years of experience and pain in dealing with V2 deployments.
And are there other constraints, like what about oracles, for example? You know, that's been historically a constraint in terms of rolling out new markets.
Perfect. So oracles will be relying mostly on PIF at the moment. So you can have only PIF for as a use of oracles for trading right now on V3. And there will not be the Chainlink oracle that required. Like right now in V2X, we need Chainlink and PIF to both push prices hand in hand. But then we found out that it's not very sustainable as a business because one, it slows down the development, and two, it's because it's ineffective because pull-based oracles and push-based, they're just not in the same league. So by the time like the push-based catches up, you have a lot of angry traders that are not too happy about trades not taking place because of like the oracles being far apart. Pull-based is the way, you know, like if, on top of that, we'll be having like a different mechanism by which we protect liquidation against adverse liquidations and trades that take place at bad prices using what PIF provides as a confidence interval. So it will be a different mechanism, but that will be rolled out somewhat in the after Andromeda is well on its course.
And do we have a sense of the number of markets that are possible, like due to the Oracle dependency right now?
Well, you know, like PIF, it's kind of has a lot of markets available for trading, like all of them, and they don't have to like deploy contracts to service those markets. They just like deploy them from their end on PIFnet and hook them up to whatever aggregators, providers they are servicing. And that's it, you know, like that's one deployment for all the different networks that consume those oracles. So
got it. And so, right, so base is ready to go essentially with the same
all of the markets are perfectly usable on base or whatever network Synthetix deploys It's not like Chainlink where we have to like wait for a contract to be deployed, and then after that contract is deployed, give it some time for it to work out its bugs and see if it worked out fine. It is different. It's different.
Understood. The final question for me, and then I'll give back the floor. Is there a reality that you see where like some new asset launches, right? There's some new token that launches, you know, in the next month, let's say in January, where you would be willing to launch that market on Base and maybe not bother to launch it on Optimism, as like an incentive to bring traders across.
Yeah. I mean, the intuition or, you know, like, V3 is an improvement to whatever we worked with on V2X. And I've spoken this to my fellow CCs, is that the objective is to move away from V2 eventually over a extended period of time, because the iterative process around it is easier. The legacy code is not there. It's not as fragile. And even like the liquidation process itself is a bit more fragile on V2 than on V3. So yeah, definitely I'd see expanding more on V3 things than V2 things, especially when it comes to new markets.
Awesome. Thank you. That's super helpful.
We're like right now at like 87 or something like that in markets. And there is a limit to how many markets we can hook up on V2, because it's like, it has to iterate on all the markets to calculate the debt. So there will be a limit at some point where, okay, we're at that limit and we cannot deploy more markets. We're not there yet, but I think at around 100 we'll hit it on V2. So naturally V2 will be like reaching a maturity stage as well. Sorry, am I like cut you off?
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, I was curious. I mean, Kane asked this question to you, but I'm wondering what the others on the call feel. Like, would we deliberately limit the ability to trade on one chain, existing chain, and in order to push it to Base? What are the things, the metrics we need to look at or decision factors? Or, I don't know, is this quite intuitive that we would do it?
I don't know if it's intuitive, but like I can give you my intuition at least, right? My intuition is that we probably need to collectively agree under what conditions we would want to start to actively migrate people from Perps V2, right? Like, you know, there's existing examples of this in the market, right? Like GMX, right? Like GMX is still doing, you know, a ton of, I mean, Uniswap, right? There's still like Uniswap V2 and V3 volume, you know. When you do this kind of fork thing, you end up with, you know, a legacy system that's running in parallel, which is not a synthetics thing that we've had to really deal with previously. And so, yeah, you know, my intuition is like you need to wait until a point where everyone is comfortable, and then you start to, you know, really try and wind down the legacy system. I don't have a strong sense of like what those conditions would need to be in order to try and wind it down. I'm curious if anyone else has thought more deeply about that.
One metric could be what Caleb described, right? Like we just say when we get to 90%, we're going to start doing that. So people have a sense of, they have a path forward. They know that we're going to take. So it's not sudden. That's one thing to look at, I think.
One way to look at it would be, I guess V2X is only on Optimism, right? So whenever we could get a V3 deployment on Optimism, that might be a good time to start looking at winding down V2X perps on the one chain that is really available.
But you also have to have some sort of SNX pool, right? Because if we're talking about winding down this liquidity source, where people have locked up SNX and it has nowhere yet to go, that it's going to be a dicey situation.
I think actually Noah mentioned before that there's a migration, like we can migrate the entire V2X system with one click to a V3 backed. Like it would be still be SNX, the same SNX backing, the same collateral. It would just be on the V3 system, and it would just be like a one-step migration for stakers.
It integrates, and we technically don't need to shut it down. It can act as its own pool within V3, but we do have to approve that pool and be all okay with there being that SNX pool in existence, which I'm all for, but that does have to be a decision that gets made.
I think maybe the deeper thing here, Adam, is like, okay, cool. Let's say we do that, and now we still have, you know, legacy perps V2 running on V3. That's probably a better situation than we have right now of like, you know, at least then we can shut down V2X, right? But then there's a next question of like, if we deploy V3 and it's not backed by SNX, like what do we do with the SNX, right? That seemed to be the question you were sort of asking. And my view is that if we did get to that point where we weren't going to have SNX backed, perps on V3, whether it's Optimism or some other network, we do absolutely need a place for that SNX to go, right? Like we can't just be like, thanks everyone. Like, you know, go do whatever you want now, right? You know, take your SNX and drop it somewhere. I think we need a place for that SNX to go. Certainly a place for people to borrow against their SNX, even if it's under different conditions or whatever. So, you know, I talked about this a little bit in, you know, maybe this potential solution of an app chain. But regardless, I think we need a solution there, for when we deprecate that. /if.
I guess another time to start transitioning is when we actually do hit some volume. And then we can set that number ahead, right? Like if we feel like 100 or some other number is appropriate, then we at least have in sight what we're aiming for.
If only someone had written a blog post with some proposed numbers around that.
It's a decision whether, you know, governance decides to remove synthetics as the collateral, SNX as the collateral backing perps. If governance does not decide, you know, to go that route and SNX is to be a collateral in V3, then if people are slow to migrate from legacy pool to a V3 native pool, then maybe the Treasury Council is, you know, asked to incentivize that migration to an native V3 pool by just depositing some SNX into the rewards distributor of that native V3 pool.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one way is incentives. I think the other way is like, you know, we're sort of arguably saying that like perps V3 is better than perps V2, we hope, right? This may be a question for a fifth, but like, do you think that there will be a sufficient delta between the two that traders will just be like, get me out of here as soon as they can? Or do you think that they'll be like, no, no, I get how this system works. Like, what's your thinking there? Like, if all things being equal, if liquidity was there, do you think that people are just going to be like abandoning the V2 system pretty quick?
I don't think it'll be quick, but I think there will be a natural forcing function of being able to move it over to a more sophisticated and feature-rich system. I think people and like never have to worry about going in and out of it. I think we have a lot of regular traders who are going in and out of SUSD regularly. We also see like open interest kind of ebb and flow. Like a big, we're at a peak right now, but we could easily see a lot of that kind of close out. And you might start to see like as positions and traders leave, they might just re-enter on the V3 side, and that's kind of how you have this gradual move, like without really having to do anything. Is it just me, or I heard somebody's mic? It sounds really messed up.
I think that was Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's me. Is it better?
Yep.
oh yeah, these AirPods, I need new ones. I need more trading fees. Yeah, so I think, do we think we can spin up a Spartan pool, like one of these new pools? Because currently ETH and USDC as part of the initial launch, but to the question of SNX being another asset that could be used as collateral, if people want to actually start migrating over it as well. Is that a possibility?
You mean like migrating stake?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, do you see any issues of having that?
Oh, I mean, like, I it's certainly possible. I mean, it depends on what people want to do. I think, like, migrating to base, that's not real. Like, it's an isolated thing with USDC. So, if you're asking if we could add SNX as a collateral over there, I suppose we could. I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it. It seems like it's kind of cleaner as we have it now. But okay. I think, like, there's other situations where I could see. Well, this branches off into a really big discussion, but like I was imagining some of the SNX that's currently staked on L1 kind of gets migrated to V3 on L1 to bootstrap the L1 perp. But we haven't really gotten to the point of actually like discussing that at actual governance level yet. But I think just to the original question of like, will people migrate positions from perps V2 to perps V3 on base? I think there's like a really good chance that if you just wait, people will naturally move their positions over.
Without incentives. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Cool.
Next question, or Tav, something else to discuss?
Look, it sounds like we've had a couple of discussion points on this. I think the Spartan Council is up to date roughly with the progress on Perps V3 Andromeda. We've chatted about a couple of things to think about once we're deployed. I think we do have to shift over to the SIP presentations now. I know we've got two non-boring SIPs to discuss. So if the council's happy, we can move over to that. Not seeing any opposition. So are you happy to shift over to SIP presentations? Maybe get the SIP facilitator, Connor, get you up on stage. Well, let's rock and roll.
Thank you, Kev. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. Looks like we have 351.
Could you speak up a bit, Connor? I don't know if it's just me, but like I can't. I'm not sure.
Is that better?
Much better, yeah.
All right. 351 is going to be presented by Roger. I do not see Roger in the audience yet, but we also have SIP 2043 to end SNX inflation. This is Kane's SIP. Kane, are you going to be presenting it?
Yes, I will be.
All right, take it away.
Cool. Inflation works when it works, and you know, at the time that it stops working, I think we need to consider ending it. And I think that we've been at that point for a while. There's a couple things that I wanted to call out because you know I've definitely had some interesting conversations in governance and a couple of other channels over the last few days around like the motivation for this, I suppose. I'm just going to sort of set the scene here, right? Like from maybe like an ideological, philosophical perspective, right? We can sit here and you know, be in crypto and play this game, you know, from an ivory tower of like, we're going to do the optimal thing and we're going to, you know, only do things that are like logically consistent and we're going to ignore all of the noise and, you know, we're not going to lean into narratives that we think are like unsustainable or, you know, react to what like the crowd is doing, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, you hear that kind of dumb shit all the time in Discord, right? You know, people that are mid-curving everything, right? Like, no, like, you can't do this because of, you know, all of my very good reasons, right? And that's fine. That's cool. But we live in a world called crypto, which is insane, and it is a market for attention, right? And so if you do things that are only logically consistent and do not take into account the fact that maybe some people have illogical views, right? Then you are putting yourself at a disadvantage against people that are willing to actually embrace the narratives and embrace, you know, the actual reality on the ground, right? Which is that crypto is crazy and that a lot of the people in crypto are crazy, and that if you want the attention of people, you need to do the things that will get the attention, right? And a big part of this is like information propagation, right? Information propagation, I've talked about this a lot, is like notoriously bad in crypto. You know, someone like, you think of like some crazy thing, right? Like, you know, we work out who Satoshi is or something like that, right? Like there would be people still 6 months later who don't know that, right? Like it just, you know, there are people who have like varying levels of, engagement with crypto. And yet hold crypto that just are not on crypto Twitter every day, right? That are just, you know, and they have their ideas that they've maybe held for like years or whatever, right? And it's quite hard to actually shift, like the collective view of something, right? And so for good or ill, we've created a dynamic, I believe, in the market where the average non-deep SNX person, you know, who's not in the SNX Discord or, you know, even like kind of not paying that much attention on crypto Twitter even, to synthetics, but maybe is active on crypto Twitter, believes that SNX is hyperinflationary. And no amount of explaining to them that like we've changed inflation and it's like now 3% or whatever, like that's just not going to cut through, right? You can sit there and like, you know, go through all the SIPs and like the logic of it and like show them the numbers and everything, right? They just are not, it's not going to cut through. Right. It's not going to cut through the noise floor. And so the only way to really cut through that noise floor is to do something that is not necessarily drastic, but is like definitive. Right. And so, you know, if we were to like say, let's lower the inflation, and I saw people propose this and it's like just the dumbest idea ever. Right. Like, why don't we lower inflation even further? Let's like lower it to like 1% or something. Like maybe that will get people to realize that, you know, we're not hyperinflationary. It just won't. Right. The only thing that's going to work is to just shut off inflation. And so if we believe that there is a detrimental narrative in the market that synthetics is hyperinflationary, the only thing, and this will not be sufficient, but it will be at least better than the alternatives, right? The only thing that's going to actually cut through that is to say inflation's over, it's ended, right? That will actually get some cut through. And so the question then is, okay, is that hyperinflationary narrative hurting us? I think the answer is yes, it is, right? Do we want to correct that? I think yes. Like there's a narrative out in the market that is hurting us that the average crypto person believes. And if we can end it, then it shifts the dynamic in the market, right? And then the second thing is, okay, who cares if people think that SNX is hyperinflationary, right? You know, like why does it matter? And the honest reality is it matters because people don't want to hold SNX. They don't want to participate. They think that it's too hard, too complicated, and holding SNX, a hyperinflationary token, where if you don't go all in and stake and do all this weird stuff, hedging, we've been saying for years, like, you know, trying to get people to stake more and do all this stuff, and it's just hard, right? And so, you know, when in the SIP, you know, I say, like, we need to shift more towards passive holders who are going to participate in this network, right? This is not like, let's give all the rewards to passive people or something, right? This is literally just like shifting in that direction. And, you know, this is an experiment on Base, and, you know, Synthetics likes to do experiments. We've done a lot of experiments over the years, right? Like, you know, there's a lot of concern trolling around like, oh no, if you do this, it's locked in forever. Like, show me one thing in Synthetics that's like ever been locked in forever, right? Inflation's been changed like 20 times. Like, so my view is that we want to shift the narrative here. We've got an opportunity. We're about to have a huge new product launch in the form of V3 and Purpose V3 and Andromeda, right? And we want all of the sentiment in the market to catalyze this launch as best as it possibly can, right? And ending this perception that like SNX is hyperinflationary, which again, it used to be, but it isn't anymore, right? We know that, but the world doesn't, right? Is just, in my view, like such an obvious, easy win, right? And the reality is that inflation is doing nothing for us right now. Like, we've changed inflation significantly over the last year, and stakers just don't respond. Stakers, maybe they were idiots in the early days and they really responded to like inflationary pressure, right? But they don't anymore. They don't care. It doesn't change the staking ratio. It doesn't change behavior. You know, people are managing their C ratio regardless, right? It's just not a powerful incentive anymore. And so my view is we have this weak incentive that is detrimental from a narrative perspective. We should end it. Not like, I'm not saying we should end it and never, you know, look back or never like work out, you know, whether there was any impact. Like, we measure everything and we see, you know, whether it's impactful. But I think that we will find that it is very, very powerful in terms of shifting perspective and perception of synthetics. And so that's my reasoning on why we should do it. And, you know, I think the time to do it is now, prior to the launch of Andromeda, to maximize the impact of that launch.
I just want to highlight something you said there about how deeply entrenched that viewpoint is. It's not just, you know, disconnected users. Just this past week, I was talking to a VC who's highly technical, deeply involved in the space, and has been here for years, who was under the impression that most of the synthetics rewards they're seeing on that dashboard were a matter of inflation, and because of that, had never touched synthetics. They didn't fully realize and appreciate the perps model. They didn't know inflation had changed. And when those were corrected, they went out and acquired a large position in synthetics right away, because they were able to dive deeper into the product, get their questions answered on that, and realize that we're no longer this hyperinflationary thing that's only benefiting from a, like a single curve pool against, you know, USDC and things like that. So this is like a widespread misunderstanding that I think points to not only the need to make these corrective actions to make the narrative easier to communicate, but also that we need to do a better job of communicating the core proposition and the changes that have happened over the years, because even sophisticated and highly involved individuals in the space, if they're not in these kinds of chats, if they're not in our Discord, they are not aware of these changes.
I think that's a really good point. And, you know, you think about the two conversations that could happen there, right? One is, oh, you know, like the rewards on the dashboard are all inflation, right? And it's like, oh, no, they're not, because like, you know, inflation is only on this network and it's only at 3% now. And so like the field over here from the fee burn, and it's like, you've lost them. Like, you've just totally lost that person, right? Like, they have a belief and you had like 3 seconds to convince them that their belief was wrong. And you go into this like 20-minute diatribe about like how the thing has shifted. Instead, it's like, oh no, there's no inflation anymore. Like, it's over. That's the answer, right? Like, aren't all the synthetic rewards inflation? No, they don't even have inflation anymore. Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting, right? Like, it's hard to come back from that. Like, what's your counter argument to that, right? Like, the inflation doesn't exist anymore. So this is my point, right? Like, the subtle, deep conversations, even with people who are deep in the space, are hard to have, right? People have entrenched beliefs. Whereas, you know, just saying there is no inflation anymore in synthetics, it's a fixed supply token again.
So I definitely agree that the narratives are important and they matter. But for me, there are two like key reasons why this makes a lot of sense. One is that now, like, the synthetics perps V2 and soon to be perps V3 has proven to be like profitable for LPs, which wasn't always the case historically. So inflation was quite necessary to keep stakers staked, so that, you know, as liquidity providers, they could like, they weren't realizing losses. So it didn't make sense to cut it off like historically, but now it makes sense from that perspective. And then the other thing that makes a lot of sense is that, like, the Treasury Council has a lot of SNX. They could fill the role of inflation where needed, like, where incentives might be needed. So, like, I don't, you know, I see, like, it's not really necessary to have inflation to have incentives either. So, like, from those two perspectives, like, it just, even aside, the narrative aside, right? Like, the narrative makes sense. But even that aside, like, from just those two points, it just makes sense for me to, you know, to have the SIP now. Like, at least at this point in time in synthetics.
Is there anybody that advocates for inflation staying for a reason other than just they like the number going up. Like, I'm genuinely interested in hearing if there's any arguments rationally of why this is of merit right now today in the system.
I don't think it's a, more of a question of whether inflation is staying or not, or supporting inflationary tokens as an experiment, but there is this question where what would happen that has been raised by some members in the community if there was no inflation rewards that was given to stakers to perform a certain action every week, which is to manage their fee ratio, enable to claim the rewards, then what would happen to the fee ratio and what would then happen to the SUSD peg, which is a stable coin system that we have. So, I think that's something that we have to address, if we move ahead without this inflation for SNX, cause there's no feedback loop anymore. What's really stopping me from, I'd love to hear what Kane's thoughts as well is on that, because that's the only thing I would say kind of blocking or stopping us from turning off inflation.
Yeah, I think this is a fair point, right? Like, you know, a non-zero reward, right, does incentivize people on some level, clearly, right, to claim every week, right, in order to claim you have to fix your C ratio. I think that's fair, right? Like, that's fair to say that it is having that impact. That said, you know, people are minting max, and managing their C ratio for the fees that they get more than anything, right? As well as for like the ability to borrow SUSD, right? So of course you get more fees, if you have more debt, right? And you also get more inflation. But my view is that, like, I think, you know, the average person gets that they get more fees by minting max, right? Now, there's probably less pressure then to, like, fix your C ratio, right? But we do have liquidations. Like, liquidations are there, right? And I think that we need to monitor the health of the network, you know, over the next, like, few months after we switch off inflation and, like, see, does it actually have an impact on overall network health? And if it does, then, you know, maybe we need to introduce, you know, some kind of like soft inflation system that's a bit of a higher point, for example, right? But, you know, in the immediate term, my expectation is that like behavior will not change significantly.
Well, part of the high C ratio. Oh, sorry, on you go, Jackson.
With that regards, I think it does make sense, and but to rely solely on a liquidation, we would have to reduce the C ratio to be able to mint a lot more, to borrow a lot more against the SNX, which then would have a lot of circulation of SUSD that potentially, if the supply gets soaked up, or if a lot of people go and leverage that and go and buy ETH or do other things with their leverage, their SUSD. I'm just thinking this could affect the peg. And then that's really bad for the optics of trading for perps markets and all that. It feels like we do need some kind of mechanism to replace the weekly claim. Cause actually at the moment, I don't have to claim anymore to get the trading fees because we burn those as well.
Agreed. But you're still minting, right? Like, you know, you would still mint if the price went up, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you would still burn if the price went down sufficiently, right? There's an argument to be made for, like, this will inject additional SUSD liquidity into the market in a good way, right? Like, a lot of people, you know, historically have hoarded SUSD because they've been concerned that they need to, you know, hold SUSD on a weekly basis to sort of manage, to manage their C ratio, right? My view is that, like, having some more flexibility around this where people don't feel as concerned to actually, you know, go and deploy that SUSD could help and get us some more liquidity there. We've sort of seen that people are trying to not get liquidated, right? Like, you know, they're managing their ratio, even in spite of the fact that, you know, the incentives are fairly low, right? Like, it's not causing new people to stake, but it is kind of keeping in line the existing peg. And, you know, the peg management system has always been sort of predicated on this idea that, you know, you need to claim, but there's like a second order effect, right? Which is, if I can buy SUSD that I've minted and sold into the market at a dollar, right, and pay down my debt, which at some point I have to, right, you know, then you've got this pool of buyers of, like, and we've seen this play out plenty of times, right? You know, the peg drops, you know, historically it might have been, you know, 95 cents or whatever. People turn up. You know, I remember there was one incident where, you know, the peg dropped like 70 cents or something for whatever reason, right? And people turn up to buy it up, right? And like over time, I think there's just been a level of confidence in the system where, you know, it's an easy arbitrage play. People buy up SUSD when it's below the peg, because ultimately the thing that is maintaining that is the fact that it's like the debt that's holding the SNX hostage, right? And you can't unlock your SNX. You know, there's a 5-to-1 ratio there, right? You know, you can't unlock your SNX. Like, I think the market has worked out that, like, SUSD serves its purpose without necessarily forcing people on a weekly basis. I might be wrong here, right? And you know, we could see, but, like, my argument is that, like, again, you know, that 3% APY is, like, probably not enough to, like, move the dial, but let's see.
The other thing is, we're going to have.
Go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
This seems to more merit some sort of incentives around maintaining the peg and liquidity pools. We may not necessarily have to do inflation, and we may not have to adjust C ratios or liquidation points, but we could find that if there are moments of strain, we might have to have Treasury deploy some extra rewards on pools that help maintain the peg. Like, that was something that was very common early in the system. We had a lot of staked rewarded pools that people were taking part in. And so that may need touch and go on occasion, but as we move to V3 and have more diverse collateral as well, that helps us avoid and alleviate that risk of a death spiral when SUSD gets a little bit off. And so I think that also mitigates any future risk there.
Yeah, like, you know, we're paying $1.2 million, give or take, right, a week at the moment secure the network's not even an accurate term, but, like, you know, that's our, like, network security, right? Our inflation to kind of keep these things in line. And, like, I just think we're overpaying for that at the moment.
Yeah, even a fraction of that directed at, like, curve pool rewards would be an astonishing amount.
Would tighten the peg up. Exactly.
Yeah.
You could do it for, like, you know, an order of magnitude less, right? Like, you know, but I mean, and even that probably might be too high, right? Like, 50K a week would probably be sufficient, so.
So people not being forced to burn their debt to claim inflationary rewards will basically lead to more SUSD being out there on the secondary market. People were just, you know, stay comfortably at like 400% C ratio and not buy SUSD on the secondary market or not hoard SUSD for the eventual burn. So I think it's a positive.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with that. And I think, you know, we've got a pretty simple mechanism. If we do find that, like, network health is dropping, for example, right? You know, we could go back to the old liquidation days of, like, you know, a 10% liquidation penalty or something like that, that liquidates you from, you know, 400 to 450 or something like that, or, you know, from 400 to 500, right? That would just, you know, probably be more effective, right? Like, we kind of couldn't do that back in the day because it would have put the network under too much strain from liquidations. But I think the network health is in a place today where you can probably, you know, get away with that. I think people would appreciate that more, right? in terms of getting the liquidation incentives, the SNX. Because, you know, we have a very good socialized liquidation system. It's very efficient. You know, you could do partial liquidations very comfortably, I think, at like a fairly high C ratio. And that would be a far, far more powerful incentive than inflation has been, you know, over the last 6 months.
What order of magnitude are we talking in the hoarding?
We've historically seen people sitting on like 20 million of SUSD, just like sitting in their wallet, not doing anything with it, which is not rational, right?
That's not rational. But is there any reason to believe that's correlated to needing to do these weekly claims? Because I'm not sure I buy the premise that this is actually going to cause more SUSD to hit the market. I think it might cause a lower average C ratio where, you know, volatility causes more liquidations, but I'm not convinced that people are sitting on 20 million SUSD because they're worried about their weekly claim.
At the margins though, right? Like you've got less pressure, right? Like it's no longer a weekly thing, right? Maybe it's like a monthly thing where you like, so like at the margins, you would expect that anyone who was concerned, who was like hoarding SUSD or like, you know, holding back SUSD to maintain the ratio, should feel less pressure to do that, right? And therefore, like, you would hope that there would be some injection of SUSD liquidity into the system. You know, this is all complex dynamics.
We're worried about that.
We don't, there's other ways you could do it for sure. We've debated those other ways many times, and we've kind of stuck with this as like, let the market decide. But this is a way of like shifting the market dynamics, arguably. Like you're still letting the market decide, but you know, you're taking pressure off people to feel like they need to be like on a razor's edge every, you know, 20 seconds looking at their C ratio.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think if anybody's saying, you know, we shouldn't turn off inflation because of that, it seems because we're worried about how excess SUSD will impact the peg, it's probably multiple orders of magnitude in terms of difference. Like I think if somebody's sitting on a pile of 20 million SUSD, it's not because they want to do their weekly payment, right?
Oh, sorry. So just to be clear, my sense was that people were talking about that as a potential positive, right? Like I think Jackson was maybe worried about the peg having issues, but like my sense is these days there's sufficient liquidity to soak up SUSD. I'd be really surprised if we saw you know, significant peg deviations from this. Like people just
we've actually had DeFi protocols.
There was a recent peg issue. Or crisis. I'm sure Caleb, you would have more information on the reasoning on that. That's why I thought.
There was an imbalance in the curve pool. There was an imbalance. I think part of that reason though, I'll be honest.
Did you literally just fucking say a peg crisis? You're lucky you're in a different city now, my friend. That's all I can say.
Like 98.8 cents. It was okay.
Yeah, it's
right.
Honestly, it's just a product of those curve pools that are like, that are kind of inefficient to have these four tokens and everyone just wants USDC out of the pool. And so like the USDC ends up, the balance drops and like everyone comes into ARB and put these other tokens in there. It just has like this inefficiency. So I think like we could fix that really easily by just incentivizing maybe only SUSD, USDC pools on Uniswap or something, or like going about other ways of like, incentivizing that liquidity. But it's usually in like post perps, like in the post perp synthetics era, like it's, or like the purpose V2, I mean, like it's just pretty rare to have like, you know, a lack of demand for SUSD below peg. So I think we'll be all right.
One last thing, no inflation saves us from the headache of figuring out how to distribute inflation in V3 among multiple pools where synthetics might be a collateral in.
Agreed.
Great. Yeah, I mean, sounds like there shouldn't be any issues, other issues outstanding to turn inflation off for SNX. There's another SIP that we that someone wants to present.
All right, moving on, SIP 351, can we get Roger up on stage, please? Ah, welcome, Roger. SIP 351, implement cross-chain SNX token transfers on Base via CCIP, whenever you're ready.
All right, can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Spartan Council and Synthetics community members, for having me present this today. Really excited about this SIP. You know, we have supported you guys with cross-chain needs on Optimism, with CCIP teleporters as being the, you know, first launch partner. I made a big splash back at the last ECC. So really excited that you guys are going on to Base. We're here to continue to support your cross-chain aspirations and put this SIP together to support you guys for that. You know, onto, without being really long-winded, onto the to the benefits, right? Why would we want to do this? Well, I think nobody loves the 7-day waiting period of, you know, getting your money back to L1, right? So we've got the immediate L2 to L1 transfers. And talk about, you know, a faster time to market. Single interface implementation. The core contributors are already familiar with the interface. They've, you know, several have made comments how easy it is to implement. So, you know, already familiar with the tech stack, already familiar with Chainlink. It also gives a real interesting opportunity for L2 to L2 interoperability. We can use, you know, Burn and Mint between the two layers. So if you wanted to go from, you know, ETH up to Optimism to Base, back and forth and Base to Optimism, that works, no problem. And we have the ownership of the token contracts, right? You guys complete, you know, you have your ownership over the token contract instead of something in a bridge, right? With the native bridge ends up taking control of the tokens. This one is, you know, the token contract that you guys retain the ownership of. One of the other things is configurable rate limit. So this is configurable, very configurable with CCIP. We have both per token and per lane. So each direction is its own lane. So we can have variable and configurable rate limits per token per lane. And this opens up, we think, a lot of interesting capabilities. You know, we're working with a lot of the money market protocols to make, you know, this cross-chain interoperability protocol the standard for money markets as well. So one of the other things I will add as additional benefit here is the ability to do programmable token transfers. So you can actually have users transfer SNX with function calls included in the same message. Some very cool functionality there. And I think the thing that everyone's also really concerned about with bridge exploits these days is security. So with that, if we can get Nandini, we see Nandini's up on the stage here. I'm going to hand it over to Nandini to cover the many layers of security that we've built into CCIP.
Thanks, Roger. Hey, everyone. Great to be here. The first thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, CCIP has been architected with, you know, security as a prime consideration and design consideration. So the way we look at security is really, you know, five layers or security, right? Five levels of security. At the very first level, you could have like a single entity that can, you know, call a server, a bridge, right? Highly centralized, obviously not where we want to be. Level two is when a protocol creates the appearance of decentralization. So this could be, let's say, one entity creating multiple servers, you know, calling it decentralized, but really, you know, a single entity maintaining control of more than one server and having those keys, right? So we, as you know, we have recently had many instances of this happen, even earlier this year, you know, it had resulted in a lot of losses to projects and users. Another thing at this level that we've noticed is that entities could have called themselves decentralized but have a large dependency on a single infrastructure provider such as a cloud service, which then brings up again the point of a single point of failure. So it's really not really decentralized at all and not what we want to have in, you know, in a large cross-chain infrastructure. Then you could have a level three, where it is slightly better in the sense that it is it's a single decentralized network of multiple node operators with distinct private keys. It's obviously, you know, step improvement in security, but with this architecture, you're not really able to scale because, if, you know, you could have spikes in usage for a single bridge that affect the reliability of all the supported bridges. So again, this brings up a slight improvement, but not really scalable for the kinds of transactions that we expect in a cross-chain architecture. Then comes level four, where Chainlink has always been there, you know, with our price feeds. This is an architecture where you can have multiple decentralized networks dedicated to performing a specific service. So what this means is that if you consider something like price feeds, if you're using an ETH USD price feed, that is a you know, specific set of nodes that are coming to consensus on price for ETHUSD. But when you're using BTCUSD or any other price feed, which is a different service, there's a very different set of, you know, network of nodes. So each service is, you know, a distinct set of, you know, network of nodes. So this is like, this is where Chainlink has always been, you know, in terms of decentralization. And this is the level at which we've been already playing for the last, you know, many years now. Now, when we architected CCIP, we wanted to further this the amount of decentralization. So what we did was, you know, we architected it in such a way that not only do we have multiple independent networks, we also have the ability to add risk management to it. So what we see with risk management is a wholly new concept in cross-chain interoperability that builds upon, you know, existing engineering principles, let's say from aviation or, you know, nuclear or machine automation or mission critical systems, where you have N version programming. What this means is that you have execution networks that are separated from, you know, anomaly detection or risk management systems. So this is where you have three separate, you know, networks that act on every single transaction that goes through CCIP. So that you're able to have anomaly detection, you're able to catch any kinds of risk and adapt to those risks in real time as they happen. So this is really the, you know, the ultimate level of cross-chain security, you know, that we've put together for CCIP. And we believe this is important because, you know, we have built CCIP not with existing levels of transactions in mind, but for, you know, the future levels of transactions and value transfer that we expect. So that's about risk management. In terms of, you know, the other aspects of security, obviously you're all familiar with the, you know, the node operators that we have, which have been already providing the underlying infrastructure for all of our services so far. All of our code is heavily audited and publicly available as well. So, you know, security is really the most important thing. And as Roger mentioned, in addition to this infrastructural security and the risk management aspects, you know, we have, you know, the additional features of configurable rate limits that are natively built into CCIP so that you don't have to worry about these things to be added, you know, as an added feature. So. I think that kind of rounds up the security architecture. Any questions on that?
So I have a general question. Which tokens are currently enabled on CCIP?
Yeah, so we have several tokens. One is, of course, SNX USD itself between ETH and OP. We have DFX Finance. We're also working towards other blue chip tokens that are going to be launched very soon. We have several others, you know, like Nuon, Raft, and many others as well.
Yeah, we could add Aave Go to the list there as well. And thanks, Nandita, for covering the security portion. Just a quick, you know, wrap up. You know, we have the technical specification at the SIP. We're also, you know, very flexible as far as, you know, any options. If the core contributors need anything changed, they want to look at, you know, different architectures. You know, I wanted to highlight you guys, you know, there's no change to the existing V2X contracts required. You know, we could, you know, have this thing, you know, working very quickly for you guys. Is there, I guess that really kind of sums up the SIP there. You know, we can hand it back over to the moderators. If you guys want to go into QA or have any questions for us, happy to answer those as well.
Hey, Roger, I just want to say, appreciate you guys, working on these things and bringing forward these proposals. And I think you guys are also talking about ones in the future for CCIP and cross-chain pools, which I'm excited to see.
I just for sake of the community, I don't think I can get there personally on a anything having mint burn access to the token rather than using a liquidity pool based bridge. I think you guys come the closest, and I'm impressed with the spec that you have forward. So if I end up not voting in favor of that, don't take it as a personal thing. It's more philosophical, but I appreciate the work that you guys have been doing with us and the accommodation of helping us solve these challenges.
Yeah, appreciate being candid, Adam. Of course, you know, nothing personal here, but, you know, I'm sure that, you know, we could work on the way that the permissions are managed, you know, to come to a solution that you're happy with as well. So happy to, you know, take that discussion offline if you want to explore some other options there as well.
I wanted to say thank you for, I think, listening to our call with the other provider. I think you treated some of the concerns we had. I was not super psyched to know that their transaction limit was a global limit for all of their protocol. And I believe that you mentioned we have a per token per lane limit. Also like that we control the token contract. I think with Wormhole, they control the token contract. So I like those things. And thanks also for the in-depth security walkthrough. I have a question, which I'm not sure it's not directed at you, but I'm generally aware that we kind of have been, you know, we worked with you and then now our CCs have started working. You know, the whole reason there was TIPS 350 is we're talking to Wormhole. I'm just curious, like, how this, like, this might be a CC type of question. Like, how are we going to more properly, more thoroughly compare the two? At least on the SC, we're not like actively working day to day on building these things out. So I'm curious, like, who's got the best idea on thinking this through?
I mean, we have, you know, weekly or bi-weekly meetings with the core contributors for various other work streams that we've got going on. And, you know, we're always more than happy to jump on a call. I'm not sure if that answers your question or, I don't know. Alex is here. Well, we speak with him on the regular as well, or Cav, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Cav wants to say some.
It's kind of tough to put on. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Cav.
No, I was going to say it's like, you know, it's a hard thing. Like, obviously I can't answer a specific question of comparing two fairly, you know, complex systems together. I get where your question's coming from, ML. You're kind of looking for more input. But yeah, I'm not able to really provide a recommendation either way.
I mean, we're more than happy to put in the work to help to get you an answer. So go ahead, ML.
Kev, is there somebody within the CC that's better placed, or is this something we need to, this SCs need to feel around ourselves?
I mean, it's a good discussion for the CC, the SC to have with some of the CCs. If anyone else wants to jump up on stage and join the conversation.
Yeah, look, I guess I can give my take on this, right? You know, I've been somewhat close to this process, I suppose, and I'll just be totally frank. I'm not 100% sure where the reticence is coming from, core contributors to, kind of communicate their preference here. Maybe that's something that we need to, coordinate, between the Spartan Council and the core contributors and, you know, get a sense check of where they're leaning. You know, this is one of those situations, I think, where there is definite uncertainty as to the path forward, right? We've got three viable paths, and we need to figure out which path we go down. But my context here is, you know, I've been a long-time Chainlink supporter, right? And, you know, have pushed for deeper Chainlink integrations across the protocol for a long time. And I started to get a little bit of pushback on that you know, maybe 6 or 9 months ago. And the sense that I had from the CCs is that, you know, we're not necessarily getting, the specific solutions that we wanted. And that was, you know, creating some challenges, right? so I appreciate that Rogers has kind of come on and said, look, we're happy to do whatever you guys need to make this work for you. But my sense is that where this process has kind of been heading is that has been challenging, right? You know, I even organized back in July of this year, you know, a big conversation between Synthetic CCs and people on the Chainlink side to try and see if there was a way to coordinate around this. And, you know, my sense is that that coordination hasn't necessarily gotten much better. So, you know, absent any particular CCs making direct comments about, you know, which solution they prefer, which again, maybe they would like to do that, you know, directly to the Spartan Council. My sense is that the momentum is in the direction of using Wormhole. And that's primarily on the basis of some of the other functionality that's being developed between the CCs and the Wormhole team. So, you know, that's my take, I guess. But, you know, as everyone else sort of has said here, right, I don't feel comfortable making like a technical determination on that. It's more of like an operational and strategic direction. And again, I've only been sort of on the periphery of that, but like that is very much the sense that I get from the CCs is that like from a strategic standpoint, that's the direction that they're moving towards is towards Wormhole. So that's context that I can add.
Yeah, I appreciate the context, Kane. And if I could just add just a tiny bit, I know that there's been, you know, kind of sentiment in the community that Chainlink is not moving fast enough or Chainlink is slow. And, we definitely push as hard as we can to get things to market as soon as we can. And we very much value your opinion and your ideas, which they're typically always brilliant. And, I wish that I could execute all of them instantaneously. But when it comes down to getting them done, we may not be able to execute the things with the time frame or the speed that you guys would be happy with. But I can say that when we do complete them, that they're rock solid and a gold standard. I mean, we've kind of built our reputation on that. So it's not something that I can rush in fair conscience. So, and I think that has caused some friction, but I can say that I am personally working very hard on my side to push the resources and prioritize things so that we can break that stigma and get things, you know, faster to market for you guys in a more rapid way. Continuing the same level of security. I mean, we've, you know, released like 3 things this year. So really excited about that. And we're going to continue to push the boundaries of what we can do. So I really appreciate you guys letting me speak.
Yeah. Thanks, Roger. And maybe to add some context there, I think it's not just a prioritization or speed issue, right? I want to be clear about that. You know, there is a view, potentially. And again, I was, you know, I'm being as transparent as I can here, right? Like I was on the other side of this view, right? Like I was like, no, I really think that we should make this work. And, you know, if speed is an issue, then, you know, we can figure that out. And, you know, if there's delays, you know, it is what it is, right? Like we're building complex systems. There's inevitably going to be delays. I think the shift from me, in the last 6 months that I've seen, and again, this is my personal opinion / perception, is that Chainlink has a much more crystallized view of the tech that they want to deliver than they did maybe back in 2019 when we started, you know, working with you guys, where, you know, it was much more open, in terms of, collaborating and like designing systems together, et cetera. And the sense that I've gotten is that you guys have a very clear view of what you want to take to market, what the use case is, you know, how it should be built and architected, et cetera, which I think is great, right? Like obviously you guys have a view on the market. Synthetics has always been a little idiosyncratic, right? And I think where maybe partially this is broken down has been on the speed side for sure, because we always do put pressure to bring things to market quicker than, you know, is maybe reasonable. But I think there is another component. It's not just speed. It's also this idea that Chainlink has a view of what the market needs. And maybe synthetics has a slightly different view of what synthetics needs. And there's a bit of tension there around actually getting the thing like explicitly that, you know, that synthetics wants, right? So, you know, these are obviously things that, you know, can be worked through. But, for me, that's, I think where, again, this momentum has kind of shifted towards, Wormhole, in that, you know, Wormhole's maybe at an earlier stage where they're more flexible and, you know, more adaptable to the idiosyncratic needs of synthetics.
Now, I'll say that, you know, no one's ever accused me of, being a link marine by any stretch of the imagination, Roger. And that's just a personal thing. But I'll give credit where it's due that of the solutions presented so far, my technical perspective, just first glance, I feel the most comfortable with chain links personally. But that said, I echo the sentiment. I don't know what it's been like in working with the CCs, but at least in the interactions that SC has had with Chainlink over the past few epochs, it felt like we are now a small fish in a big pond, right? You guys have your sights set on some key things, and so getting the prioritization or the accurate timelines or those adjustments, that relationship has changed. And if that's what's right for Chainlink, that makes sense as well. And so SC being out of that loop and feeling that way has definitely been a challenge as well on that side of making sure that there is that accommodation. But credit where credit is due, that I do think you guys have put forth a good and solid product, and I think it's worth us a value.
Thank you, Adam. I really appreciate the sentiments there. And I hope very much that that's not really the feeling, because I can tell you from the Chainlink standpoint that there's a special place in our heart for synthetics community. You were actually our first users of price feeds in 2019, and we don't think of you as small fish. You are one of the key innovators in this space, and we always consider you a very priority user. So that's my standpoint. There any other questions on the SIP?
Roger. Just on the SIP, thank you for putting the very detailed SIP together. Very impressive. I think I've never seen a SIP as detailed as what you guys had put together. And just wanted to get a feel for the CCIP as a bridge. Has this product, is there a long-term vision besides synthetics? Like, do you guys actually have other tokens using this bridge? Is there a plan to have this as a supported as a long-term solution for like more ERC-20 tokens and or cross-chain, or is synthetics the first project that you guys have put this together for?
Obviously, we're really proud to have you guys as launch partners back at ECC. But we see this as the new standard. Like, we're setting the new standard in bridge security. We're also talking to, you know, quite a lot of, you know, folks on the capital market side. I think you guys have seen the announcements with the POCs that we've done for Swift, for cross-chain. Yeah, we have serious resources put behind CCIP and have, you know, very, very large plans for this as a very, very secure cross-chain bridge. I hope that answers your question, and feel free to have any follow-ups if you like.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the security is there and Swift partnership, but it doesn't seem like you've had any other like ERC-20 or other protocols yet adopted. My question.
Yeah. Nandini, do you want to cover that one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We have over like 9 projects and 9 tokens enabled right now on CCIP. We have DSX Finance, we have Nuon, we have Betsworld. We also are in the process of enabling a Seiko coin very soon. So we are in the process of testing that. That should be out on testnets later this week. So definitely a lot more coming up. We have been in early access mainnet so far, which means that projects need to get whitelisted to be able to use CCIP. But general availability is coming up soon. And with that, you know, we do plan to, you know, we do expect that to expand, the number of tokens to expand quite rapidly in the next year. And beyond that, we also do have plans to expand to non-EVM chains as well. So if you look at the last 6 months, that is just the starting of what we plan to do in the next year. The next year is going to be much more rapid because we're going to be in general availability, and you know it's just going to expand a lot more than what you would have seen in the last couple of months, including being able to scale very quickly from chain to chain.
Yeah, thanks, Dandini. I want to add also, you may have seen the announcement with Aave. We're going to be handling their cross-chain Go needs as well. So that's another big project that we'll see much more. And there's a lot more in the works, so a lot more announcements coming soon as well.
Great. Thank you very much for that.
All right. I think that's it for the presentations for this evening. Thank you, Roger and Nandini, for being here tonight. Thank you, everybody in the audience, and everybody have a good night. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.